here, and this is Conspiracies Unlocked. So what did we do last weekend, Heather?
Oh my gosh, it was so much fun because my son and I went up to
Bakersfield to the California Hot Rod Reunion, where I was and my husband won the race as well as the championship. And I, for the first time ever, after 11 years of racing with him, wore a super cute, like, backup girl outfit.
Yes. With, like, hot. Not even cute. It was, like, my fucking hot.
Tits hanging out, my ass, like, hanging out, the whole thing, and the heels.
Fishnets.
The whole thing. I finally did it. So I can't wait to do it more. But, yeah, he won, so that was fun.
And it was cool for my son and I because my son got to be part of the team for the weekend, and he got to wipe down the tires, and he worked on the throttle.
Something
that had to do with the throttle.
And he, and then
he... Oh, no, torque.
Yeah, the torque converter. And he did, he switched all that out, and they did the best pass of the weekend right after he did all that, and they did 6.94 seconds in the quarter mile at going 191 miles an hour. So, yay! Super fun. Heather live streamed it, so you guys can go see it on the Facebook, and I'm sure you'll put it other places maybe.
Yeah, I've only put it on Facebook yet, but I will. I didn't know if we were going to add it to YouTube, but since we are talking about it, I'll put it on YouTube
also. Guys, the trophy that you get when you win the Hot Rod Reunion, the specific race, is the most obnoxious trophy. It is usually, it's only two tiers. This time it's three, and it is literally the height of my husband. Like,
yeah, it's very tall. It's
the height, usually it's about a third of the height, so it's already so obnoxious and ridiculous. And I'm like, where the fuck am I going to put this? I'm like, we have a trophy shelf. He has so many trophies and stuff because he's been doing really, really well these past few years. But, like, this is obnoxious. We're used to the little Wally and the cute little, like, trophy guy. This thing is huge. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it is really big. I got a picture. Obviously, we got pictures of Brad with it. But my son was holding on to it in the back of the truck on the way back. And I was like, hold on, do not let go. And he's like, I know. So I got a picture of him holding on to it. And my son is really tall. He's like 5'11", I think. And it dwarfed him.
Yeah.
And it was, I mean, he was sitting down, but it just made him look so small.
It's ridiculous. But so if you catch National Dragster, we will be in the probably December issue. It usually takes like a month for, you know, to actually hit the magazine. So we'll be semi-famous, you know. Hopefully they do the group photo. Sometimes they put in the group photo of, like, everything, and other times they just put his car in, like, if they have a good picture of his car, they'll just do that. But it's always fun when they do. One time they only did him, where it was just him holding the trophy. I'm hoping that they do the whole picture so I can be in the magazine. I've only been in it, like, once, I think.
Well, they should do, because he's the champion.
He's always in it, but...
No, but because he's the champion, they should do, like, a whole page where it's just him and the trophy.
They don't do that.
And him, the car, and then the whole team that's there for the weekend.
They do.
And then all be in the magazine. Yeah.
They don't do that. He'll get, like, a little, like, maybe like a quarter page.
No, he should have a full page.
Because it's just like that series. So he's part of the Heritage series, and there's different series. So the NHRA has like, I don't know, like 50 different divisions, and they all go in that magazine. So there's other champions, just not of Junior Fuel, not of his class in his series.
Well, I think that each class should have a full page spread. It should not be exclusive for him. It should be the entire each.
What they should do is have like a yearbook at the end of the year.
Oh, yeah.
And then have all the participants on this side, and then this page be the champion. That would be really cool if they had like a yearbook at the end.
That would be cool.
That'd be super cool. Yeah.
And then the fans can buy it online and they can autograph it.
Oh, my God. That'd even be better.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, National Dragster, are you listening? NHRA, let's get on this.
So, YouTube, stay tuned, and I will post those videos probably later today.
Yeah, that sounds right. Okay, so on to our episode. Y'all have heard of the Bermuda Triangle, obviously. But have you heard of the Bridgewater Triangle located in the United States in the northeast portion of the United States, kind of by in Massachusetts? So it's located in southeastern Massachusetts, actually. This little area is it's not really little because it's 200 square miles. And it forms like a little triangle. And it is, to the north is Abington, to the southeast is Freetown, and to the southwest is Rehoboth. And in this triangle, there's the smaller towns of Taunton, Brockton, Rainham, Bridgewater, Marshfield, Norton, Easton, North Middleborough, and Segregonset. So a cryptozoologist named Lauren Coleman was the one who named it the Bridgewater Triangle. He named it in 1983 when he published his book, Mysterious America. And he just did the major spooky locations that are in the Hockomock Swamp, Freetown Fall River State Forest, Skim Milk Bridge, which is a bridge that's made of 4,000 stacked rocks, and Easton's Mill Pond, where legend has it a wizard lived there in the 1700s.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so there's just so many weird phenomenons that occur in this, like, this location, that it's one of the most, like, diverse hotspots for paranormal activity. So it's not just UFOs, it's not just Bigfoot, it's not just ghosts, it's everything. Has all been seen in this little condensed area.
And there's a lot of water around there, right?
Yeah, because there's a swamp. It used to be a glacier. Part of it used to be a glacier like 1,000 years ago, and then it melted into a swamp.
So I would imagine there'd probably be USOs too.
Yeah, maybe. They didn't talk about that at all, so I'm not, yeah. So I watched this, like, awesome documentary that really, like, gave me all of my information. I did some other research too, but the documentary had so much information on it. The documentary, the people that they interviewed in this documentary was Jeff Bolliger, which is a paranormal researcher, and he has written several books, including Weird Massachusetts. Christopher Pittman, who is specifically a researcher of the Bridgewater Triangle. So some of these people, like, they have years and years of experience in not only spooky shit, but primarily this exact location.
Okay.
Tim Weisberg did Ghosts of South Coast, and he's a host of the radio show Spooky South Coast. Chris Balzano is a paranormal researcher with over a decade of research in the New England area, and he has the books Darkwoods, Cults, Crime, and Paranormal in the Freetown State Forest and Ghosts of Bridgewater Triangle. So this is a compilation of all these people's theories, thoughts, and what they've seen and what they've gotten, and they interview all these people, and it's just, like, crazy because there's firsthand encounters. Some of these people have seen things firsthand, or they've talked to someone firsthand. A lot of times you hear, whenever you hear of, like, legends, urban legends, scary shit that goes on, it's like my friends, cousins, next door neighbors, brothers, aunts, cousins.
Yeah, it's twice just like an removed, urban legend.
Said that he saw this happen. And it's like these people have talked to people who firsthand witnesses, and then they've seen things. So it's definitely interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So what makes this Bridgewater Triangle? What do you think causes it? Some people think that the Native Americans put negative energy in the area. So New England was founded in 1675 with the Plymouth Colony. And finally, after years of torture, the Native Americans rebelled against the colonizers, and that's when they had King Philip's War. King Philip was the American name given to the leader of I'll tell you the name of the tribe later. It's in my notes somewhere. I can't think of it.
Yeah, but
his real name was Ontonawanna. And in 1676, So anyway, so King Philip's War happened and Rhode Island got involved. There was a lot of innocent children and women who died on this like area, all in this area. In 1976, King Philip was beheaded and they put his head on a stick.
Oh, yeah. They used to
for
do that.
Show.
Yeah.
And they put it at Plymouth Rock and it sat there for 20 years. Just like a stick.
Yeah. 20 years.
That head, the stick, the head on the stick of this old Indian chief.
Wow.
Just as like a warning, like, don't fuck with us.
That's crazy that it sat there for that long that no one took it down.
Yeah, no. I mean, they couldn't. They'd get beheaded.
Yeah.
So by the end of the war, there was 500 English colonizers that were murdered, 3,000 Native Indians. And any of the non-Christian natives were sold into slavery. So if you didn't convert to Christianity, then you were just done or killed.
Yeah.
It was the bloodiest conflict in American history with 5% of the population being killed and murdered. 5% of the population.
Wow.
If that was just in San Diego, 5% of the population would be, I think if I'm doing my math at the top of my head, 150,000 people would be done. And that would be 5% of San Diego.
It's a lot of people.
County, I think.
Regardless, 5% of any
anything, yeah. That's a lot. So,
because you're talking lives.
Yeah.
We're talking about people.
And a lot of them are innocent. Children, babies, you know. Mm-hmm. And this obviously caused a native, just bad energy, bad juju, just the negativity. Mm-hmm. Whether the Native Americans put a curse on the land or if it's just the bad energy in itself. I mean,
or
just having that
icky. Or maybe they just were, like, haunting the area because of what happened to them. Like,
yeah.
Payback.
Yeah. Yeah, and we get into that, too, in a little bit. So obviously they're thinking that like King Philip's War is definitely, if not the cause, definitely added to the cause, of this weird shit going on. 17,000 acres of that 200,000 acres is just densely forest wetlands. And it's called the Hockomock Swamp. And Hockomock means place where spirits dwell in the native language.
Okay.
And there are at least 1,000 graves that are over 8,000 years old in this area. And this is when the natives were there, when it was still a glacier before it became a swamp. So like 8,000 years ago, this area was a big glacier form. And that's where when the graves and that, you know, whatever happened then, that's why there's so many graves there.
They said math ain't mathing.
Why?
On the number 5% for
San Diego County has 3 million residents. So 5% of 3 million, is that 150,000? I just mathed it really quickly. So if it's not mathing, I'm sorry. Now I have to Google. I was trying to think what...
Usually I don't do the comments and like interrupt, but somebody said
what
math.
What is 5%?
Math ain't mathing.
3 million. I did it in the top of my head. It is 150,000. No, out of the top of my fucking head, my math perfectly well. Thank you very much.
Maybe they don't know how many people are
in
San Diego
County. Yeah, San Diego County has 3 million people. So the densely forested swamp was used as a hiding place for the natives because they knew what, like, where every nook and cranny was. And so they would hide, and then they would plan sneak attacks against the colonizers. And they say that if the Bridgewater Triangle was, like, a living spirit, whatever, that the Hockomock Swamp would be the beating heart of the Bridgewater Swamp. That would be, like, where all of it. There's constant reports of eerie, uncomfortable feeling of being watched, ape-like bipeds, enormous birds, snakes that are like giant cats, red-eyed dogs, all have been reported. And the original guy that named it the Bridgewater Triangle, Lauren, he has been researching cryptos. He's been a cryptozoologist since the 1960s.
Oh,
so
he
like
has a
he
lot
knows
of
his shit, right? And he came from California in 1965 and just immersed himself in the Massachusetts Bridgewater Triangle and all these, like, weird happenings. In 1970, there was a Bigfoot sighting, and police started to track Bigfoot. And they thought it was a bear at first, but instead it walked on 2 feet. And the police saw this. So it wasn't just, oh, this guy saw it, this guy saw it. The police actually saw this hairy ape man-like thing on 2 feet. Carlston Wood, that was a kid that grew up near the swamp. He used to explore with kids, as like kids just exploring around. And he saw a huge hairy man, aka Bigfoot, when he was a kid. Josh DeAndre in 1978 saw Bigfoot as well. He actually founded the Bridgewater Triangle Expedition Team, the BTET, in 1985. And he would go in with cameras and he would try to, like, so he must have really seen something to make this and try to go back and keep going back and keep going back. And he spent so much time and effort. And when that little expedition thing failed, he went on to form the Paranormal Investigation Organization in Bridgewater in 1992. So Joseph DeAndre was really the one that was really pushing the legends to keep going. And he just kept compiling information, compiling sightings, just be like, oh my gosh, look at all this stuff. Look at this sighting. Look what happened over here and over here. And he's compiling everything. He really is the thing that kept it going. In the 1980s, John Baker was fur trapping, which I don't really know what fur trapping is because I'm not a hunter, but I believe it's where you just like try to trap like squirrels and shit, right?
Wait,
like,
what do they call it?
Fur trapping?
I don't know. I would assume they put those big like things you step on, like the bear traps.
Yeah, that's what I would think too.
The ones they step on and then they would make.
Okay, let's see.
Clothing.
Fur trapping is the practice of using a device to catch and kill animals for their fur.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So.
Yeah, so they probably just.
So anyway, so he was out there fur trapping and he encountered.
Yeah, to obtain for clothing, bedding, and shelter because that's how they kept warm.
Yeah. Well, this was in the 80s.
Well, I mean, originally. Yeah. Originally, that's why they would want.
So he encountered Bigfoot. He said that he saw someone following him and that this being was huge and it smelled so bad. You could smell him from like a mile away. Like it smelled like skunk and just mildewy and just icky.
I've heard that about Sasquatches before.
That they smell really like skunk-like.
Mm-hmm.
And then there were sightings of thunderbirds, which are gigantic raptors.
I swear we saw.
I know. I think all we saw was the California condor or something. But yeah, we were so scared. We were on a hike in the middle of like not a very populated area. And we definitely, something flew over us. And we were like, well, gotta go. Bye. So,
No, you were not like, okay, bye.
You were.
I was like, okay, bye. And you were like,
let's go.
See what it is. I was like, no, that thing can pick us up and take us to its lair. Because it looked like a dragon. It was so big.
Yeah, you had kids then, I didn't. So she had to get home to her kids and be alive. And I was like, whatever. I was a free spirit. I was fine.
You were like ready to go for a ride on its back.
Let's go.
We're like never.
Onward.
Never ending story. Where are we going?
Exactly.
Like, no.
We have to have fun. So anyways, in 1971... Norton Police Sergeant Thomas Downey saw a bird with a 12-foot wingspan. And he said it was 6 foot tall, and he slowly saw it lifting into the air. And what's funny is that he saw this bird in an area that was called Bird Hill. So it's like, I wonder if the natives or somebody else, like, if it's known of these massive birds, and that's why they call it Bird Hill.
Yeah. Well, must be, yeah.
In the 1930s, during the Depression era, the CCC was working in the Hammock Swamp and saw these giant, like, eel-like snake things, like, huge snakes, like, where,
like an anaconda?
Yeah, like, where, like, feral size, like, thickness snakes were all over. Lauren Coleman reported that talked about the Mansfield mystery cat, and this was seen in 1993. It was a large tan cat the size of a Great Dane, resembling a mountain lion.
Oh, okay.
And so I'm wondering if it was, but there has been, this one has been seen several times. There's several firsthand experiences. Some believe that it could just be an escaped large exotic cat, because as we know, like Joe Exotic and Carol Baskin, like they have large cat things, like sanctuaries that it could have escaped from. They've also, some people have seen Black Panthers at the same time as the tan cats. So why would the Black Panthers and the tan cats, whatever they are, be seen together? In May 1993...
Aren't they usually, like, the wildcats territorial also?
Yeah, so it's weird that they would be seen, like, together at the same time. Mm-hmm. But some people have said they've seen them together at the same time.
Maybe it's a spirit animal.
Maybe.
Not a physical, you know, animal.
Yeah, like an Alabria?
Well, because, like, the natives, they believe in the spirit animal, yeah, too. So if it has it going back to the people that were killed and stuff, it could be, like, their
maybe,
spirit animal.
Maybe. Maybe it wasn't even really there. Well, they did say... They did find a headless carcass of an African serval, which is like pretty much a 30-pound small cheetah.
Oh, wow.
And for some reason, the authorities did not believe that this serval had anything to do with the other cats that were found, which seems kind of interesting. Like, why wouldn't you just think that? Obviously, like, maybe somebody got rid of their exotic zoo and...
Mm-hmm. Just release them.
There you go, you know? So I don't know why
You're free.
Why they wouldn't believe that it would be the same, because it was all in 1993.
Yeah, somebody could have easily just...
Yeah.
For whatever reason, let them go. Maybe
or
they were going to get
fined or something. Exactly.
So they're like, just go. Live in nature.
So, also, bloodthirsty dogs have been seen in 1976... They were huge, large dogs with red eyes, and they attacked and killed two of this guy's ponies. They were out on an afternoon walk, Friday afternoon, 2:30, broad daylight, walking his two little ponies, and all of a sudden, this huge-ass dog killed the two ponies, just, like, came up and was ah!
I'm sorry. But it's just so funny. Like, it's just so normal. Walking his little ponies.
I don't know. Well, on Monday night, after we just got back from the races, I took Max to my son to soccer. And I'm on the phone with Heather. And all of a sudden, I see a horse. And we live in, like, a city, not really, like, horse land. And I see a horse with a man riding it on the sidewalk with a cowboy hat and a flannel. And I was like, what did I just see? And I was like, I asked Max, I'm like, Max, did you see the horse and the cowboy? And he's like, yeah, Mom. I'm like, okay, good. Just want to make sure that we're all on the same page here. What the fuck was that?
I'm not tripping.
Yeah. I was like, I know I'm tired, but am I that tired? Yeah. So anyways, yeah. So the bloodthirsty dogs ate the ponies, like, in broad daylight, like, just came out and just, rawr. A resident of Rainham was working at, like, 3 in the morning. His name's William Russo. This happened in 1990. And he used to work the, like, third shift. So I don't know if that is really third shift. But the 3 p.m. to midnight shift at work. And he was walking his dog, which was a Rottweiler Shepherd mix. It's a 90-pound dog. Like, it's a big dog. Mm-hmm. He's walking his dog after work. So we're talking, like, maybe 12:30, 1 in the morning. Mm-hmm. And he's taking his route. He decides to go down a different way. And there was, like, all of a sudden the dog started to, you know, like, cower, get all, like, spooked. And there was a street light with, like, maybe a 10-foot radius of light that was, like, shining down. And the, all of a sudden he saw something stand straight up and walk into the light. And this,
where did it come from?
From the woods behind it. Cause it's all woodland area. And this thing was 3 to 4 feet tall. He had a pot belly, no clothes, hair that was like 3 to 4 inches long, big eyes for his head. Like the eyes weren't really like big, but like in comparison to his head, it was like bigger head or bigger eyes. He said a face like a chipmunk. And he thought at first it was like a child. And then he's like, he's like, no, no, not a child. And so he kept saying, the thing kept saying, I want you. And so he's saying like, oh my God, he's saying he wants you. Mm-hmm. We want you.
Would that be like a skinwalker?
Yeah, I don't know. And it was like the thing was like, say, I want you.
But skinwalkers usually don't have fur, right?
Well, yeah, they can.
They can.
Yeah, they just go into whatever. So he just like walked home super quickly and he didn't tell anybody for a very long time because he was like, what did I just see? I sound crazy. This is crazy.
Yeah.
And then of course there's all these disappearances because why not? There's disappearances everywhere. But in 1916, Evelyn Packard was on a canoe trip down the swamp and her body was eventually found and deemed to be drowning. But what's interesting about this disappearance is that it actually led to the discovery of Solitude Rock. Solitude Rock had a poem inscribed on it, like from hundreds of years prior, and it says, all ye who in future days walk by Nonkatusset stream, love not him who hummed his lay cheerful to the parting beam, but the beauty that he wooed in this quiet solitude. It's like a random poem written on this like random rock.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, so moving on to Lake Nipponicket, which is in the swamp. And in the swamp, there's like an island, like it's like a lake that's in the swamp. And then in the middle of this lake is like an island. And people would say that they would see monkeys on the island. So they would go on their little canoe and they would go towards the island and then they would see red orangutans. Then they would look back onto the swamp part, like back from where they came from. Yeah. And they would see fire on the other side of the lake. So they like where they were. And then they would go back over there to be like, what the fuck? Who's over there? And there'd be nothing.
No fire. So it was like hallucinations.
Yep. Exactly. And the lake only reaches 8 feet at the deepest point. So there's like many drownings and missing people, but like it's not like it's super deep of a swamp. You know, like it's not a super deep lake. So why are there so many missing? You should find the people.
Yeah, the bodies would not, if they drowned even, they would not disappear.
Yeah.
It would be very easy.
Unless
there's like a...
like quicksand at the bottom type
something
thing. Like
that
where
would suck them in.
Okay, now this is what's interesting. There's the Rainham dog track is within this triangle area. And they say that they saw spook lights, which they call it spook lights, but it's glowing lights that would go up and down the track. Some say it's just swamp gases. Some say energy from spirits. And every civilization, what?
Isn't that, like, the joke with any kind of lights like that? Like, UAPs, or they always say, oh, swamp gas.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, that every civilization has something like this. It's a will-o'-wisps, the Marfa lights. Like, we've all done episodes on these.
Yeah.
And the Wampanoag, oh, that's the name of the Indian.
The tribe.
The tribe. With the Wampanoag, had stories of the Pukwudgie.
Oh.
The Pukwudgie were beings or spirits that would turn into a ball of light that would either lead you to safety or off a cliff. So.
Just depending on maybe.
Depending
if you
on
were
what
good
it was.
Or bad,
yeah,
or
if they were good or bad, I guess. So that's what they believed. James Michael Rice was an author who grew up in Bridgewater. And there was an Indian bridge, and he was, like, going near... He was on the Indian bridge, and he saw a canoe, and he thought that it was just night hunters with lights, with lanterns. And when they got closer to the canoe, there was no canoe. All it was just bouncing lights, like, skimming the water. And they were blue, red, orange, and it seemed like they were, like, playing with each other along the water.
Like,
dancing around. Yeah. And then they were doing a ghost tour on the swamp, like in the swamp. And all of a sudden they saw this cloud shape, greenish blue hue, 15 to 20 feet in the air. And then it vanished. And two people saw it and they didn't say anything until they got back. And they were like, dude, did anyone else see that? That was so weird.
Was it in the shape of something or
just? No, just cloud shaped.
Okay.
So just like fog or mist or whatever. Or not.
Spooky though.
Yeah. All right, now on to the UFOs. In 1908, two carriage riding undertakers on Halloween. It's getting worse.
Of course it's a carriage riding undertakers.
On Halloween, saw a bright lantern in the skies. So obviously that would have been a UFO. Or maybe they saw the lights.
Mm-hmm.
Because the light and lanterns, like...
And you would think if they're undertakers, not much would faze them.
Yeah, that's probably why they called them lanterns and not, like, aliens.
Yeah.
In the 1970s, there was, like, a ton of UFO activity. In 1979, there were large low-flying UFOs. A news reporter, Jerry Lopez, and Steve Bracha both saw UFOs. So they were there, like, investigating, doing investigative reporting, being like, hi, I'm over here at the swamp, and supposedly they're, whatever, you know?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden they see it, and it's like, what the fuck? So, and this is all at the Raynham dog track, all near the Raynham dog track. They saw a bright light over the tree line. It looked like a baseball home plate. Oh. So that, like, 1, 2, 3, 4. What would that be? 5?
4.
5. Home plate has the thing. The triangle at the top.
Oh, I thought you meant how many bases are there.
No.
I'm like,
a baseball home plate. Whatever the, like, the house shape.
Is that a hexagon?
I don't know. I think hex is like 8 or something. I don't know. Anyways.
I think a hexagon is 5, no? People in the comments, tell us.
Yeah, right. Okay,
what shape is that?
Yeah. So I guess that it had lights all around it. And it seemed to be the size of 5 747s, like the plane, wing to wing.
Oh, wow. That's
like
huge.
5 of them. Huge. And there, yeah, was a cord hanging off of the UFO with sparks, like, coming off of it, flying off of it.
Pentagon.
Thank you. And it was close enough to feel like they could throw a rock at it. Jerry Lopez was an Air Force veteran and, like, knew it was not one of, like, an American plane. And this pentagon-shaped UFO...
Thank you, Joy.
...that was huge was said that it hovered over for a bit and then it just took off. And they were, like, before this, they were 100% skeptic. Like I said, they're out there doing their news report. Hey, this is... Jerry Lopez with ABC 10,
mm-hmm,
here out reporting all this shit that's been going on at Raynham Dog Track.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden they see it and they're like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And after that, they were not skeptics. Skeptics. Mm-hmm.
Skeptics.
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 Skeptics. Skeptics. The newspaper then went on to interview a bunch of people who saw it, and they... drew, like, you know, like a police sketch?
Yeah.
They drew...
The UFO?
Yeah. They drew, like... Oh, they, nice. They got, like, a...
I'm gonna try to find this sketch of the UFO.
They drew a picture of, like, what everyone saw, and it looked like exactly what the news reporters saw. And in 1979, Ron Baker saw a UFO that looked like what the reporters saw, moving slow, 300 feet in the air, and he said it was the size of 2 football fields. So we're talking, this shit's big, and
yeah,
many people are seeing it. In March 2011, Derek Holt got video of the UFO. And that is real. I saw the video.
Okay, you need to send me the video so I can share it with our viewers.
It's, yeah, it's on the documentary. So
yeah.
Well, yeah.
I'll find it.
Okay. So at first he saw orbs, and then he saw them enough times to go out, buy a camera, and then record it, because he kept seeing it, like, every night.
Oh, wow. So this was not, like,
and
a
guess
one-time
where
anomaly.
No.
It kept happening.
Yeah, and guess where this happened? At the Raynham Dog Track. There's something...
Everything goes back to that.
Yeah. All the UFOs keep going to the dog track area. Yeah. The video that I saw shows flashing blue-green pulsating lights around the main ship, and you can see much smaller orbs that are circling around the ship, kind of darting across the sky. So it's not just like a plane going by, because it goes back and it just, like,
yeah,
does all sorts of things. And in Native American history, this, like, area was the most densely populated place. in pre-colonial times. So any flat space within 1,000 feet of the, like, many water sources would have been villages for Native Americans. Maybe not the same, mm-hmm. the same tribe, but all this whole area was super densely populated.
So it must have been a lot of natural resources they could live off of for a long time because they kept settling there.
So in 1928, Brown University psychology professor Edmund Delabere found an aerial... Oh my gosh, an Indian burial ground near the Taunton River near Berkeley, Massachusetts. And this was like a grassy island burial area. It was 12 miles southwest of Hockomock Swamp. And there were like a bunch of graves.
Yeah.
And they would open the graves and they would find red okra. And then the okra would like boil and disappear.
Wait a minute, when they opened
it? As soon as it hit, like, the air, it would just boil and disappear. Okra is made from a chemical, with other chemicals, a formula, and then being buried in the soil for thousands of years, that when it hit the air, like, it might have just, like, rapidly changed its, like, composition. Like, I don't know, science, you know?
Wait, are you saying okra?
Okra.
Isn't that what you eat?
Yeah.
Yeah, because you fry okra. My dad used to fry okra.
Yeah, I know. It's a natural clay-based pigment that can be red, yellow, or
different
brown
okra. This
color.
Is different.
And
this
it's made from ferric oxide clay and sand and is used in paints or dyes.
No, this is different. This is totally different word.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm thinking okra, the type that you eat.
I was too, but I Googled it before. That's how I knew it was science. Something to do with science.
Well, it sounds like it's clay.
Yeah, but whenever it hits the air, it like boils and dissolves. So there has to be something else in it.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So, even the archaeology and like geology of this area is fucking weird. They have Dighton rock, which came out of the water, and had all these etchings on it. In it, Oh no. It's getting worse. Okay. Sorry, guys. Okay. That was my phone. My bad.
You gotta get repositioned now because you're not.
Oh. So the theories go that the Phoenicians, which was an 18th century Norse and 19th century Portuguese, were in the 20th century, and oh my gosh, my notes are so fucked up right now. There's this rock with like all these etchings that came from different people throughout the centuries. So between the Portuguese, the Norse, the Phoenicians, the Native Americans, and some of the drawings are the same as ones that are like randomly found in like Vermont and other places. They say some inscriptions are older than 1511, and it's like a Mediterranean type of script. So this rock is like a super special rock for Native Americans, they believe, because of all the different etchings.
So do they believe it's like holy?
Like maybe it has they
some
didn't
kind of spiritual.
They didn't really say it because they don't really know, because it like it came out of the freaking water. Like it wasn't there and then all of a sudden it like like water dried up and it like came out of it. There wasn't too much on Dighton rock. So that was
write
just
it
that
down.
There's a whole bunch of inscriptions covering many years.
Okay.
That, yeah. And then Freetown has a glacial rock formation. And in that, there's a silhouette of a Native American. And that was a sacred site to the Wampanoag Indians. And then there's a rock with, like, a generic smiley face. But it's, like, somebody, like, actually, like, cut out the face, the eyes.
Oh,
so it's
yeah.
not written on. It's, like, there's a hole in the rock for the eyes and the smile. And it's super generic. Like
so it's carved. Just
yeah,
like
it's
carving.
Like carved, not etched. It's like full on in. But it's like, it reminds me of what you would draw when you're like two or something. Like it's just like two dots and a smiley.
Yeah.
But that's weird that they would do that in like 200 or 300 years ago.
So that was the first smiley face?
Yeah, like, it's so random. It was spooky looking because it was just, like, hollowed out.
Yeah, I'm writing notes, and I'm going to post photos, whatever I find, to share on our Facebook. So if you go to our Facebook, you'll see the photos.
Then, you know how people will stack rocks on each other and have them, like...
Well, like, at the beach.
Yeah. Well, they were doing that, too, hundreds of years ago, but they were doing giant rocks.
Oh.
So yeah. Those random, like, giant rock formations that are just, like, stacked on each other,
mm-hmm.
which is so, like, it's just, it's all weird, like, anomalies. Like, why is that there? What is that?
Maybe they did it just like people do it now, just for, like, a hobby.
Maybe, yeah.
But how did they do it with them being so heavy?
Exactly.
This is not beach rocks.
No, they're not pebbles.
Mm-mm.
They're like boulders. So Anwan Rock is the rock where, like, after two weeks after King Philip died, all of his little Native American people, his tribe, like, fled and, like, was scared, went mm-hmm. to Anwan Rock. And 2 weeks later, Captain Ben Church led a team into the dense, like, forest of the Plymouth Colony to collect leftover natives, and he chased them all the way to this rock, and they surrendered peacefully on August 28th, 1676, which was the end of King Philip's War. The problem was that they surrendered peacefully, and even, like, as a treaty, Ben Church gave the then leader, since the original King Philip was dead.
Yeah.
So gave them, that leader, a Wampanoag belt as, like...
Like a peace offering.
A peace offering. Ben Church then left him with, like, the guards or whatever, who then proceeded to kill every last Indian. Then Ben Church came back three days later and took back the belt of the peace offering.
Oh, that's nice.
Right?
So I wonder, did he know they were going to do that, or did they do that on their own, and then he came back, and
he's like, oh,
there was
shit.
Nothing he could do at that point?
I don't know. Hmm. Nobody knows. I mean, no one's going to say it's, like, unless he wrote it in his diary, like, oh.
I don't know. That's fucking shady.
Yeah. You think? Like, you can't do that. That's rude. So... Supposed
rude to kill people.
It's rude to, like, give a peace offering and then turn around and be like, fuck off. So, and kill them. And then come back and steal their peace offering. So, supposedly, Native Americans obviously, like, haunt Anwan Rock, and they haven't left.
Mm-hmm.
People who go there can hear the sounds of people speaking in the native language of, in their native language, and it's called Algonquin. And they can hear drums beating, and they can see fires, like, through the rocks with no heat coming from them, no smell, no smoke, no nothing. Investigators have seen it during the anniversary of the surrender, which is in August. So it's supposed to be hot, but they felt cold spots near the rock. People have seen the ghost of an elderly Native man standing on the rock, which could be King Philip or the guy that Captain Ben Church totally screwed over
mm-hmm.
after his peace.
Yeah.
Yeah. They even in 2012, they have all these recordings using the EVP, the electro whatever mm-hmm. audio. And she heard, and she has multiple recordings, and they thought that they saw the ghost of what she thought was the leader who died when he surrendered, the one, like, with the head on the...
Yeah.
Not the one on the head with the head on the rock, but, yeah. The one that was given the wampum belt. Sorry.
The one that we don't know was in on it or not.
Yes.
Yes.
So, people do believe that, the legend goes that if the belt is returned to Anwan Rock... that all this weird shit will go away, or at least that portion of it, and all the bad juju will be gone. But no one knows where the belt is to return it.
So if they return the belt, then
the peace offering
is it, like,
will be...
they're stuck there?
I
like
don't
they
know.
They haven't been able to be at peace,
or they don't want to be because they're pissed because they broke the peace offering. So maybe once the belt is returned,
their energy is just stuck.
Yeah. They're pissed. But no one can find. No one knows what happened to the belt. Moving on from the Indians, there's the redheaded hitchhiker of Route 44. This is a farmer in denim jeans and like a denim shirt, having like a red like beard, like mountain man.
Sounds Irish.
And this one is really credible because there's lots of firsthand experiences that have seen this. This hitchhiker. It's pretty much the classic hitchhiker haunting. He can manipulate the radios. If you honk the horn 3 times, turn off the lights, turn them back on, he's supposed to be there. Like, all these urban legends have come from it.
I have never heard that urban legend before.
Well, but, like, classic hitchhiking hauntings, they can always manipulate the radio. Or, like, if you're driving through with 3 people in the car, then he'll show up as the 4th person.
Okay, I've never heard any of these.
Okay, well...
Yeah. Okay.
Just like a classic urban legend. But there was a guy that was interviewed that had a firsthand experience, and it was snowing while he was driving on Route 44. He had the windshield wipers going, and he saw the face of the red-haired hitchhiker man that was just, like, on the windshield.
Oh, weird.
And he was just, like, super shook up. Just about this town of... Just more on the town of Rehoboth. It was first settled in 1636, so it's one of the oldest settlements in the U.S. So that's why it's so haunted over in Massachusetts and stuff, obviously, because it's been there.
There's a lot of history.
Yeah, a lot of history and a lot of close history
and a lot of death.
A lot of death and fighting and murder. So because of that, it has a higher than average number of cemeteries. Wow. So that's interesting, too. I mean, I'm sure that underneath us, there's a lot of, like, ancient cemeteries that we don't even know about. Like, we could be on one right now that's, like, way deep down there from, like, an ancient civilization that we just don't know about. But these are, like, plotted out, like, in recent history. Mm-hmm. And, like, there's a little boy running around asking to play in one of the cemeteries.
Aw.
I know.
Poor kid.
There's the
one. I wonder why he can't go.
I don't know. And then there's, like, a woman in white hovering, obviously. There's always a woman in white.
Usually she's by a body of water, though.
That is true. Well, this whole thing is a body of water,
though. Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Woman, and then there's a dark figure that he looks normal, except that he's wearing 19th century clothing. And they've nicknamed him Ephraim.
Ephraim.
Ephraim. Or Ephraim. Ephraim.
Sounds and, like he should be from Utah.
And Ephraim would be pounding on the ground and wailing. So obviously this is an unsettled ghost. Then they see a vapor ghost seen coming out of the forest when there's, like, no fog or mist or anything, which goes back to that bluish-greenish thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just all this... crazy shit, like EVP sessions, electronic voice phenomena sessions, can be heard saying la 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 la, like singing. There was another singer that would actually be singing this, like, lyric, "You won't let me know my love from me," and she's actually singing on it, and they have it, like, you can hear it, like, I heard it. It's really weird. In the 1800s, Palmer River Manufacturing Company manufactured cotton and yarn. And in 1884, the building was on fire and burned down, and they couldn't salvage any of it. And you'll see lots of ghost fires now. And there's a man in black clothes that walks around that looks sad. So lots of ghost stories in this area.
I mean, it makes sense because so many people died there.
Okay, and this story is really crazy. So this place is the birthplace of U.S. education. They had 13 one-room schoolhouses, so it was the most, like, educated area. And one still stands, and this is the Hornbine School. And the school was built in the 1840s, and then in 1937, they stopped having school there. Now it's a museum, old schoolhouse museum. A school teacher went there to see the museum, and it was closed, but the shutters were open. She looked inside, and she saw a whole classroom full of students with the teacher, which they called a school mom then. Mm-hmm. And she thought that it was just, like, a historic recreation, whatever. She went to the front door to, like, go in. It was locked. She knocked on the door. Nobody answered. She goes back to the window, and they're still there. But as soon as the school mom looks at her, she's like, what the fuck? And looks at her really weird. Mm-hmm. Everything starts to vanish. You know what I'm thinking?
How did they see? How was she able to see them?
And how were both ways?
Yeah.
What I'm thinking, though, is what if this is like a time dimensional thing where the ghosts that we see are really from, like, they can see, like, we're seeing a different time.
Like a dimensional plane?
Yeah. Where, like, so I wonder if that school teacher, if we go in her diary, if she's going to be like, oh, I saw a ghost of the lady.
Yeah.
Do you get what I'm saying?
So it's almost like the two timelines somehow
go together.
Well, they don't go together, it's like a glitch in the matrix.
Yeah.
It's like for that split second, both were able to see each other.
Yeah.
And they both thought each other were ghosts. Well, but it's just because time is always flowing, present, future, and past. It's always going at the same time.
Yeah.
Like there is no time. Everything is just always happening.
I think that with time, everything is always happening. And it's always happening at the same time.
Yeah.
But we're only seeing this time period.
Like, this moment right now
is happening again and again. And it's always happening. But we're only able to see this particular moment in time.
Mm-hmm.
Because our brain can't.
Time is so weird.
We have a whole episode on time.
Time is like, time just blows my mind. Yeah. I don't believe in time.
No, I think, like, time is, like, man-made.
It's definitely man-made just so you can kind of have, like, a guide. Sort of. Time is a guideline.
Yeah.
It helps you schedule appointments. It helps you.
But wouldn't that be crazy if she could have identified the school teacher, we found the diary, and she said, oh, my God, something really weird happened. I just saw a ghost.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It was a ghost on both ends.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there would be no other explanation for it.
And that's why she looked at, like, oh, my God, like, what was that? Because she's probably looking at, like, what is she wearing? I'm wearing some clothes like that.
And then she has all these kids there she has to protect.
Yeah.
On her, from her point of view.
Yeah.
Like, she's teaching a class. So she's like, who's this crazy person at the door?
Exactly. Or whatever. Exactly. Okay, so get this. This is also, I saw the video recording of this. They did, went into this old historical home in the 1800s. It was the Keith family home. And they have EVPs, they have recording, they have the whole thing. They're doing the whole investigative thing. This chick is talking, saying, oh, I smell roses. It's like rose perfume.
Oh, yeah, scent is a big one.
And talking. Meanwhile, while they're talking, the EVP picks up a gunshot. And you can tell that nobody else can hear it because they don't even skip a beat in their conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But you hear a gunshot and, like, it's obviously, like, it's real because it's happening. But they don't, like, if we heard a gunshot, we'd be like, whoa, what was that? They don't even pause, and it's like mid-sentence, and they don't even pause. They just keep talking.
But she smelled roses from the gunshot?
No, she smelled roses. She's talking about how she's smelling roses to another chick. The EVP is just on in the background.
Oh, okay.
Just always on.
Yeah.
And when they went back to listen, they heard the gunshot, and they were like, what the fuck? We didn't hear that at all, you know?
See, it's interesting to me, but it would be even more interesting if she smelled like sulfur, smoke or something.
Yeah, exactly.
With the gunshot. Why roses? Yeah. Unless the person had something to do with, like, there was roses in the room when they were shot or something like
that. Yeah, or the person that was shot had perfume that was roses or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
But, so, Copycat Road is a 7-mile, this is another urban legend about the Mad Trucker. It's a 7-mile stretch of, like, road that's, like, paved in the beginning, then slowly doesn't get paved, and then it's almost, like, undrivable. It's all just, like, dirt. And the legend around Freetown, Massachusetts, is that a pickup truck comes up behind you, honking, being all crazy, lights flashing, the whole deal, and tries to run you off the road. However, this is not credible because there's no firsthand sources.
Yeah,
so
but
it's
I think
like
I've
the urban
heard,
legend, like whatever. Yeah,
I've heard something like that similar.
Yeah, and the Freetown State Forest is a 10-acre preserve. People don't go there at night. And this is located in the lower right hand of the triangle. And people, like, they just don't even go. There's too much criminal activity. And paranormal people think that it's just because there's so much negative activity and energy that it attracts negative people to
the
it.
Criminals and everything.
Yeah. Like in the 70s, 80s, and 90s when there were several satanic cults that would go there and do sacrificial rituals.
Maybe because of the energy there.
That's, yeah.
It drew them there.
The serval cat, that with the decapitated serval, like all that, that was...
Oh, that could have been some satanic ritual.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So they would, the police lieutenant, it was the same guy, he started in the 70s, and he was the one that investigate all the satanic shit. And he's like, dude, I'd see some weird shit. He'd see people in robes. He was told, oh, those are just leftover hippies from the 60s camping out. Like, weird shit. But
yeah,
like,
but hippies don't wear robes like
that. He would see satanic graffiti.
Maybe a poncho.
You could tell that there was, like, there were signs of, like, child bad things. There was homicides. Oh, like
trafficking and stuff?
Yeah, and there was, like, just weird shit. This lady, Doreen Levesque, was a prostitute and offered her soul to Satan. She was found dead with her head smashed in and signs of sexual abuse, and her hands were tied. And then...
So do they believe that she was a sacrifice? Like a willing participant?
Yeah. And then Jan Barbara Raposa, same thing, but found in the woods, but same exact way. Then she... they found out that there was a prostitution ring that was doing satanic rituals, and prostitutes in November 1979, prostitutes would start calling the police about this satanic cult that was conducting rituals in the forest. And in this particular Fall River apartment, police went undercover, and the pimps were cult leaders that were leading satanic rituals. And it was like a boy and a girl that were in their early 20s that was leading all this shit. They end up going to jail. So, they're still in jail.
So probably the girls
they
were not
probably
willing.
Were not willing.
No, they probably just thought that they were like a John and they were just going to go and have sex or whatever and get paid and then go, but then they got murdered.
Yeah, well, in one prostitute that did come forward, she was supposed to go back for another meeting with the police. She came forward to the police, said that these people are the ones that killed Doreen and all these people, and she was supposed to go back to make her statement. She was never seen again. 6 months later, they found her body. Head smashed in, tied up, blah, blah, blah.
So they got a hold of her.
They got a hold of her. In 1980, these people were arrested. So, yeah, but even though they were gone, the satanic rituals still continued.
Oh, yeah, because their followers are going to try to continue the cult.
And then there was, like, in one of the oldest cemeteries there was a mausoleum. Mm-hmm. And kids would go in and take the heads from the graveyard.
Oh, that's just asking for trouble.
Yeah, from the graves. And they ended up having to take off the doors and the windows, and they had to, like, brick them up so people would stop breaking into the mausoleum. So no one can even go in there anymore. Yeah, and
that's just asking
they
for trouble.
Well, they thought that they would get power, some sort of power from drinking from the skull.
Okay.
Yeah.
They watched a lot of movies.
Yep. They even had the Faxon Animal Rescue League had a pet cemetery. And in the 80s, they had to close it because people were digging up the remains of these animals for rituals.
Oh, the animal remains?
Yeah. Because, like, if your pet dog or whatever died, you could take it to the pet cemetery.
Yeah, they might need, like, a I don't know what.
Yeah.
A femur.
Well, that way they didn't have to kill an animal and they could take it to the cult leader and be like, look what I found. Look what I did. I did this, you know, and take credit for it. They found many underground bunkers. One was built in a hill covered in blue tarp and then, like, wilderness, like, tree branches and stuff all around it. Inside that one, there was a tiny chair made for, like, a two-year-old. With bindings on it. So
there was bad.
Lots of child abduction with the occult. And they could never like trace it back to who or where or when or what.
Just the two that were arrested, but not after that.
Yeah. There was a Carl Drew shack that was a hut that was a half mile in the forest. They finally found that shack in 2012, and there was tiny cots and a fire pit in the middle, and there was a pentagon on the floor, and you could just see the remains of the bunker. And
pentagrams.
Yeah, what did I say? Oh, pentagon. Whatever.
Because you were thinking about the other
yeah.
one.
Yeah. There's animal sacrifices. They just got bigger and bigger, so they started off, like, in the 60s with, like, squirrels, and then they end up getting to the freaking serval cat and, like, you know, bigger, better.
Bigger, better.
Bigger, better.
Exotic.
Exotic, yeah.
We're getting fancy in our rituals now.
But then, get this, in 1978, Mary Lou Arruda remains were found tied to a tree, headless, and they're like, no, that was not part of the satanic cult. Well, then what the fuck was it?
Well, I mean, if they had a habit of smashing in heads, why wouldn't they elevate it to decapitation?
Yeah.
I mean, they obviously, that was their way of, signature.
Yeah, and in 1987, a drifter was murdered in the forest. 2001, two men were found shot to death in a car. So there's lots of, like, homicides that, like, I don't think that the men that were shot in the car were part of a satanic ritual. You know, there was just lots of, like, in 2006, they found there was all of a sudden a lot of animals dying in this one particular area. Lots of dogs. One escaped emu was found dead.
Where did the emu come from?
I don't know, probably where the fucking Black Panther came from. The same exotic zoo that can't close up their gates properly.
It's just a lot of carnage in one area.
Yeah. And like, so that's why they're saying that it's impossible. Just bad juju, or that it's so negative that it's attracting negative people and bad people in general.
It's like almost like it's like demonic. Like
it is. Satanic.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Well, besides satanic, just, yeah, it's just evil.
That spot is like,
and come on, it's just evil.
You like hear about spots being like that, just evil spots. Like, yeah. Like just concentrated evil. Like,
there's one that we have not done a story on it or episode on it, but like in Japan, the forest where everybody goes to like commit suicide.
Yeah, the suicide forest.
Or they just go and they just, maybe they don't commit suicide, but they're just never seen again. Like, they get lost and die or whatever.
It's like they go there just for a walk and then they never come back, or they find them dead and they weren't even suicidal. So, like, what are you doing? Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah.
I forgot about that place. Okay, so let's talk about the Pukkawudgies again.
Okay.
So these are the 3-foot-tall beings.
Yes. That have, like, the fur and the big eyes.
Well, so they're part of Wampanoag folklore. They're mischievous, and they're blamed for everything that went bad. Troublemakers, evil. So if anything went bad, they blamed it on the Pukkawudgies. Which is interesting, because when I was little and anything that would get lost, my mom would say, oh, the leprechauns took it. The little people took it. Yeah. No, that's not the leprechauns. The little people took it. And I was like, what? And she's like, that's what we used to say when we were little. Or whatever. That was like the folklore in Scotland.
I think my mom used to say little people took it too.
The little people took it.
Yeah.
So anyway, so it's just interesting that everybody has somebody to blame. Something, some spirit, something, some urban legend, folklore, whatever, to blame for like bad shit happening.
Mm-hmm. Or like if we're talking about Central America, they would say it was the trolls.
Yeah.
Remember when we did the troll episode?
Yeah.
And they would leave out coins and offerings so they wouldn't come do mischievous things and cause all
mischief. So after the Wampanoags had been Christianized by the colonizers, they started to believe that the Pukkawudgies were the henchmen of the devil. So they were human-like with large noses, fingers, and ears with gray skin. So that's interesting because that takes the fur out of it, unless the Pukkawudgies are mating with, like, Bigfoot.
Or it's different cultures, different versions of what they saw.
This is all, it's the same area.
Oh, it is the same.
So maybe that guy that saw the furry thing, maybe it wasn't a Pukkawudgie, maybe it was something else. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, so they apparently had magical powers because they could disappear and glow in the dark. They could control orbs of light. And then they were called Tai Pai Wonkas, which was like, it was like a shadow-like force that would control the Pukkawudgies. And Pukkawudgies always have a dark shadow following them, whether they're controlling them, watching them, whether it's the devil, it doesn't know. So
That's interesting because there's the whole like cryptic of just the dark shadows.
Yeah.
You know, that's a whole nother.
But it's not a true Pukkawudgie unless the dark shadow is following it. So the guy from earlier, Chris, I think his name was Chris, from earlier who saw the little person in the spotlight, he wouldn't have known to look for the dark shadow. And even if he could, he probably wouldn't be able to see it because it was dark.
Yeah. You wouldn't have known.
Okay, but get this. May 2008, this chick named Maureen struggled on camera with a puckawudgie or something, but no one else could see it.
What?
It's the weirdest fucking thing.
Do you have the video?
Yes, I've seen the video. You need to send me all these videos. I've seen it. And I even rewound it and like paused it and looked a bunch of times.
Rewound it.
Yeah. Rewound it, right? Okay. So
I don't know if people in the video rewound anymore.
Well, yeah, because you still rewind on live TV and stuff, and like on everything. We're streaming. You rewind it, fast forward it. Yeah, you still do it. So, anyways, in the video, you can see Maureen backing away and looking like she's pushing something off of her, and then she threw off. The way, like, either a purse or, like, a canteen. I only say canteen because they're, like, off camping or, you know, they're out in the wilderness. Yeah. But it was, like,
fanny
a purse.
Pack or something.
Something that, like, went across her breast area and, like, was just on the side of her. And so she, like, threw that off. And she's just, like,
at them or just off?
Just off. It's just trying to get whatever was on her off of her. Mm-hmm. And then two men grabbed her that were, like, on her side that were, like, trying to help her, grabbed her. And one said, "Don't go in the water," to her. Like, don't go in the water. Okay. And then the other one was saying, "This is not your body. Leave this body in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Leave this body right now." And they could hear, I could hear, right before she, like right when she's being attacked and stuff, before the men got there, that you could hear growling, hissing, all this weird, like,
not coming from her, though.
No. Coming from, I don't know, something
so
else.
She wasn't possessed yet.
No.
Like, it was trying to possess her.
Then a light could be seen in the distance while Maureen was, like, recovering, because then you could see her, like, fine and stuff, and then there's a light in the distance.
Like it was leaving.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Weird, right?
Yeah, I want to see that video.
Yeah,
so
well, when we go to my house later, we'll look at it.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to post it on here, actually.
Well, you can record it then off the TV, because it's on the TV.
I'll just screen record.
Yeah. Oh. Okay.
Like, whatever it's on, I'll screen record that little clip, and I'll just post that little clip. Or whatever little clips. I can make a reel with a bunch of little clips.
So another area that's close to where this happened to Maureen, it's called The Ledge. And it literally looks like the ledge, like the cliff that's in the beginning of Pocahontas. The movie Pocahontas, where she jumps off whenever the chick at the bottom's like, "Your dad's home," and she's like, "Oh, okay, yay!" And
she
like
jumps off,
just jumps off to get to the boat. And apparently,
doesn't she dive into the water?
Yeah, she does.
Yeah,
we watched it last night after I did this. Me and the boys, I had the boys watch it with and watch
just
Pocahontas. No, the whole movie.
Oh, I was like, just the
dive part. Everything always goes back to Disney. So, anyways, the white woman on the ledge is this legend, and it's the Lady of the Ledge. And apparently, like, people have seen her standing there, and then when they turn around, she's gone. And, like, this one dude saw her standing there, turned around and be like, "Hey, look at this," and then turned around and gone. And he's like, "Oh, my God, is she in the water somewhere? Like, where did she go?" Like, so that's how real it looked.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And apparently, supposedly, she committed suicide because her lover was supposed to meet her there, but never showed up. So, you know, basic, like, urban legend. But there is a firsthand witness of someone who saw the lady on the ledge. What they've noticed, though, in recent years is that the boundaries of the Bridgewater Triangle have gone beyond the triangle. There's now, like, it's not a perfect triangle anymore. It's the spots of everything are kind of everywhere now. Mm-hmm. Some people believe that in other countries and other areas, like in, I don't know, they believe that the jungle in itself, because it's still so natural, has a spirit and a soul, and the Hockomock has a very old soul, and it can hold the memories. Mm-hmm. And it's
well,
like,
it's by water, right?
Yeah.
Water has memory.
Yeah, I know. I learned that in Frozen too.
And I mean, water literally has memory. So
yeah.
If there's a lot of water, this energy could be trapped in the water.
Yeah, it's like
And maybe that's why they said, "Don't go in the water."
Yeah. Like, it's like everything there, like something is definitely happening there. Everything mm-hmm. is interconnected. And if you combine all the evidence, it's like with the history, the geological factors, the paranormal, the aliens, the monsters, like they're all connected. It's all drawn to each other. The videos, photographs, audio recordings, mm-hmm. just all weird, unexplained, like... It just, it's all weird that it's happening there. It's so concentrated.
Yeah.
And so one of the guys that were interviewed, he quoted saying, "I don't believe in the Bridgewater Triangle. I accept it."
Oh, okay.
Because it's like, I don't believe it. It's, you have to accept it. It is what it is. Like, mm-hmm. what you, there's no belief. It's there. This is happening.
Well, there's
whether
too
you
want to
believe
things.
It or not, it's happening.
Yeah, there's too many incidents that have happened there. To make it just, if it was just one thing that happened, you can just kind of maybe write it off. But because
even like,
so much has happened
yeah,
in that area.
In that one little area.
There's no way that not any of this is true.
And there's no way that it couldn't be haunted. So much has happened. There's so much bad juju. There's so much bad.
It's just a know? Lot of lives. Because you got to think when they're, when all those people were murdered.
Yeah.
That's like, you know, they weren't just murdered. They were like... probably tortured and raped and just horrific things, you know,
and that,
beheaded.
And you're talking about the Indian and then the...
And the cults.
And then you go on to the cults that did all that, too. So it's like, it's almost like history was repeating itself
yeah.
in that one location.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's very interesting.
And there's... in the water, there's got to be something else there, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
in the water. In the water, like a swamp mm-hmm. monster.
Nessie.
Well, that is all I have on the Bridgewater Triangle. Let us know what you think, and don't forget to
share, like, and subscribe, and I will try to post a lot of these videos and images for you.
And email us at conspiriesunlocked@gmail.com. Bye.